This podcast is brought to you by On Track Studio.
Welcome to Mum Life Untangled. I'm your host, Emma Bunting. I help new mums return to exercise to rebuild strength from the inside out by providing personal, group and virtual training with a community of like-minded mums. My business is called Motivate Mums, and my mission is to educate, support and encourage mums to return to exercise safely after having a baby. In this podcast, I'm on a journey to untangle some of the complicated things that we experience as mums. My aim is to create clarity and understanding, leave you feeling inspired. If you'd like to join me virtually, you can join me in my Upskill membership, which offers 9 live sessions a week with 3 MumSafe trainers, myself and 2 others. We provide an online membership with live sessions, and if you can't make the live session, you can jump on the recording. Everything is delivered through a Facebook group and into an app, so it's like a PT in your pocket. If you want to find out more, head to my website, www.motivatemums.com. Click on the Upskill membership, fill out your form, and I'll provide you with a 7-day free trial. Do it, because I promise you'll love it. All right, I'm super excited today to have the amazing Caitlin Pender from Her Women's Health, based in Maroochydore on the sunny coast. Caitlin is a registered physiotherapist, as well as a qualified yoga, Pilates, and bar instructor with specialized training in pelvic floor physiotherapy. Caitlin graduated from the University of Canberra with a Bachelor of Physiotherapy and since worked in private practices in Hervey Bay and on the Sunshine Coast. Caitlin is passionate about managing women's health conditions such as pelvic floor dysfunction, pelvic pain, pelvic organ prolapse, and incontinence. And Caitlin is extremely passionate about educating and empowering women with all aspects of their life and brings this passion with her when teaching. Caitlin supports, prepares, restores the woman's body and pelvic floor for pregnancy, birth and beyond. Welcome, Caitlin.
Well, thank you for having me.
So excited to have you on here.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, let's get into it. First off, important question we'll start with. What is your favorite cocktail and who would you share it with?
My favorite cocktail. I've got to say the first thing that comes to mind is probably a margarita.
Yay.
I love a good margie. And I would share it with friends, family, anyone that wanted to join me.
Excellent. Nice one. My favorite too, by the way.
Nice.
All right. So, let's talk a little bit about you and how you got into physiotherapy and what interests you in the women's health field.
Yeah, awesome. So I suppose my journey into women's health was not the most conventional. I studied physiotherapy knowing that I wanted to work with people and that I wanted to work with the body, and I was interested in sport and just loved working with people one-on-one and helping people. So that's what got me into physio to begin with. And then, like most people studying physio, I wanted to work with sports teams and really specialize in musculoskeletal physio, and spent a little bit of time working in Canberra with AFL teams and sport, and pretty quickly decided that wasn't for me. Standing on the side of an AFL field in Canberra in the middle of winter was not my dream.
What do you mean?
Yeah. So eventually I moved to Hervey Bay after spending some time traveling and studying a little bit of health psychology online, and then ended up in Hervey Bay where I was working with a women's health physio, and she was about to go on maternity leave. So there was a caseload of all of these mostly postmenopausal clients that needed seeing when she left or when she dropped down with her hours. So she pretty much begged me to do my training.
Yeah.
And at first I really had no expectation. So I went and did the course and was just fascinated by how little I knew about my own body and how little I knew about the pelvic floor and everything, just about everything to do with poos, wees and sex. Mm. That's the job description of a pelvic floor physio, really, optimizing those three functions.
Yeah.
But we just, it's so taboo in our society to have these conversations that it just blew my mind how little I understood my own body. And I, you know, as I grew up doing gymnastics and competitive springboard diving, so I really thought I had a good understanding of my body, and it just shocked me that this like little black box that I kept over my vagina, I just had no idea about. So then I came back and I started working with mostly postmenopausal women, but also women throughout the ages. And these women would come to see me with major pelvic floor dysfunction, like serious urinary incontinence, major pelvic organ prolapse, pain with intercourse, even some of them who had such overactive pelvic floors that they couldn't ever have intercourse. So there was such a spectrum of women that I was seeing, and within a few sessions I was significantly changing their quality of life, you know, going from multiple changes of pads a day, completely saturated, to completely continent and able to get back to the activities and the life that they wanted to live. So I just found it very rewarding and really started to understand how important it was to look after this part of our bodies. I saw a lot of women of that older generation. I worked closely in Harvey Bay with a private gynecologist who was very proactive at referring to pelvic floor physio before she operated on clients. So all of her clients that were potential candidates for prolapse surgery, only about 50% or even less ended up needing the surgery after working with pelvic floor physio. So, wow. And this is post-menopause, so the capacity for recovery is less than around that pre- and postnatal stage. So I just really started to see the benefit of optimizing pelvic floor strength and really wanted to get the message out there. So when I moved to the Sunshine Coast, I started working more with pre- and postnatal clients, and I wanted these women to have the education and tools to not end up in the situation of these women that I was seeing post menopause that were saying to me, I wish someone had told me this when I was pregnant or when I was postpartum. So that really drove me to improve antenatal education on the pelvic floor. And I started, did my yoga teacher training when I came to the Sunshine Coast and started teaching more Pilates and just seeing the woman as a whole. I think in some aspects of physio, it can be very zoomed in approach. We can look just at, you know, the muscle and the tendon without looking at the whole person and their life and all of the other factors that contribute to that tendon health and how it functions in their whole life. And I think pelvic floor physio can be a little bit like that as well. Traditionally, there was this real sense of zooming in on the pelvic floor and just considering it in isolation to everything else around it. So started to integrate the teachings that I had from my yoga teacher journey and Ayurvedic medicine, which is the sort of medical science behind Ayurveda, and Pilates and treating women as a whole, looking not just at the pelvic floor but how it interacts with the rest of the body and the other muscles and, you know, mental health and exercise and the things that you do.
So, yeah, it's so important. I mean, nail on the head then. It's just looking at the everything that's going on, stress, sleep, everything from a new mother, pregnant mum, what they go through and the changes they go through, and just taking it all into account. It's so important. Nice work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And obviously the woman, we have a baby and then we have the 6-week checkup with the GP, which gives the big tick to go back to exercise. And we know that that isn't really the case. They have the checkup and then they think that they're okay to go back out there and exercise. And do you think it's more popular now that women come and see a women's health physio, or do you think it's still not out there that much?
I think there's an awareness. I think that because of social media, there's an increased awareness of pelvic floor physios. And I think, yes, in this younger generation coming through having babies, there is much more awareness of what we do. But I still think there's a lot of factors that limit women from actually taking the step to book that appointment. Mm. And that is, I think, partially that it's probably cost. You can get a Medicare rebate in some circumstances, but GPs don't often refer with the Medicare rebate unless you specifically ask for it. So there's a cost that's associated, and a lot of postpartum women either aren't working or on, you know, just a maternity leave government payment, which is the bare minimum. So cost is definitely something that would come into it. But I think time, more than anything, it's like you have good intentions.
Yeah.
But actually booking it in is a different story, especially if you're a mother who's struggling with a colicky baby or, you know, low milk supply and having to express or something else on the journey of becoming a mother that might make your own well-being a lower priority.
Yeah.
I think that can become a barrier, and then it's like 3 years down the track when you're running after your toddler and you start to leak that you think, oh, shit,
yeah,
it's probably time to do something now. And I don't think it's ever too late, but we can do so much more in prevention and optimizing well-being if we start that journey, well, in pregnancy really, or even preconception.
So when should a woman come and see you? So what kind of time frame? When in pregnancy and then postpartum?
Yeah, I think even if someone is planning, if someone is having a conscious conception and they're starting to plan to have a baby, it can be a good time in that preconception stage to have an assessment and to become more aware of what's going on in their pelvic floor so that they know what their baseline is. And so that we can identify as well anything that might impact fertility. Mm. I see a lot of clients with endometriosis and polycystic ovaries and work with a lot of women with vaginismus, which is an overactive pelvic floor condition. And if their pelvic floor is really overactive, they might not even find intercourse. It might be completely unbearable or it might just be painful, but you know, the beginning of the pregnancy journey is conception, and in order to conceive, ideally, you want to have pleasurable intercourse. So I think starting the pelvic floor journey there can be good, but otherwise, yeah, in pregnancy, once a woman's found out she's pregnant, I think it's never too, like, it's the earlier the better.
Okay.
In my opinion. And I think it's because the service that I offer is more holistic. We're looking at ways that the woman can support herself through yoga and Pilates and understanding what is safe and what's going to support her physically and emotionally in pregnancy. So it's just a source of that information, because a lot of people will go to Google and there's just, it can be very overwhelming because there's so much conflicting information online about safe exercise in pregnancy and what you should and shouldn't be doing. So it's much more beneficial for a woman who's just conceived to seek that advice from a health professional. And then I can give her individually tailored advice because, for example, if a woman asks me, is it safe for her to keep running in pregnancy? Well, there's so many factors that come into that decision, but one is, what's the state of her pelvic floor? And a first-time mum who's not had any pelvic floor dysfunction, compared to a mother who's maybe having her third pregnancy and has had two instrumental births and is leaking when she coughs and sneezes, it's going to be a very different answer when we're thinking about the safety from a pelvic floor perspective. And then we can start to look at other things as well, like from an injury perspective, is it going to be the best thing to support her? Does she have a history of, you know, an ACL surgery on one side or lower back pain or SI joint issues? So then it's being able to really individually tailor it to the woman depending on her injuries, her body, her goals. And that's why, you know, personal training or small group fitness classes are important as well, because it allows you more easily to individually prescribe exercises.
Yeah, and I think for the listeners, and a lot of, you know, a lot of people I come across don't actually realise they should or they could go and see a woman's health physio prior to getting pregnant. So I think that's important to you know, that, and you look at the whole body. So talking about running then, which is a total different conversation, but even if they ran before, they're used to running, your body changes so much through pregnancy. So in that instance, it's good to come and see you to talk through whether it's a good idea to carry on. And that's just an example, you know, that you use. So yeah, interesting. So we've talked about the pelvic floor a lot. Can you explain the function of the pelvic floor and what it actually is, please?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the pelvic floor, it's the layer of connective tissue and muscles that literally make up the floor of the pelvis. So its main function are in those three things that I mentioned before, poos, wees, and sex. So to have a healthy pelvic floor, it means you've got an optimal ability to control wee and poo when you eliminate it, making sure it's not leaking, and a satisfying sex life, orgasm, you know, pain-free intercourse, and an ability to empty your bowels without straining or pain or fecal incontinence. So all of these things working optimally is sort of the role in part of the pelvic floor. But then when we zoom out, we look at the pelvic floor also as the connection fascially to the whole core system. So we don't want to just zoom in on, as I said, the one muscle. We want to think about how it functions as a whole. And the pelvic floor is like the base of our core system. So our core, I like to think about it as a pressure system, almost like a can. So if you think about a soda can, the top of the can is like the respiratory diaphragm. The bottom of the can is the pelvic floor. The front of the can is the deep transversus abdominis muscles. That's the core, deep core muscles at the front. Mm-hmm. And then the deep back muscles at the back. And if you think about a soda can when it's pressurized, it's really strong. Like you'd be really struggling to pop it or squeeze it unless you opened the lid. But then if you open the lid, if you think about an empty Coke can, it just can crumple. In order to have good strength in the core system, we need a strong functioning pelvic floor, because if there's weakness in anywhere in this pressure system, it's going to create a less stable base. The pelvic floor is the bottom of that core system. It functions in optimizing those three really important functions for, you know, a happy, healthy life, which is poos, wees, and sex. And it can be anywhere on a spectrum from really overactive to really underactive. And this is like a lot of muscles in the body, but it's particularly relevant in the pelvic floor. And often we just think about it like you either have good pelvic floor strength or bad pelvic floor strength, but it's a little bit more complicated than that, in that it's on a spectrum and it's continually changing, and it can be really overactive to the point where you're symptomatic, say with pain, with tampon insertion or a speculum or intercourse, or because the pelvic floor is so overactive, it's kinking the rectum and you're constipated chronically, or you're having some urinary incontinence, but it's because those muscles are so fatigued that they're not functioning optimally. Mm-hmm. So that's the overactive side. But it can also be underactive, which means that you could be experiencing things like a heaviness or a fullness or dragging sensation vaginally, or urinary incontinence when you cough or sneeze, or leaking on the way to the bathroom when you're busting. So it can be anywhere on that spectrum, and those are just some symptoms that might go with either end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. In the middle, we have optimal. And on the other side, before you hit symptoms like pain with sex, after optimal, there's what I call hypertonic, which means that it's just a little bit always on, but not so much that it's causing symptoms. And this is where I see a lot of women these days, especially women who are stressed, because we hold a lot of tension and tightness in our pelvic floor, much like we hold tension in our jaw when we're stressed. We often clench. But we have an awareness of the jaw. We often know if we've been clenching at night or grinding our teeth, but we're very disconnected as women to our vagina and to our pelvic floor, that we often don't notice. We're not aware that we're gripping through there all the time and that we're holding that tension and tightness. If we think about this spectrum from overactive to underactive, a woman could be anywhere on that spectrum. So individual assessment is really important, because that's what is going to dictate how we facilitate her exercises. If she's really overactive, we might focus a little bit more at the beginning on down training the pelvic floor. Another example of this is if you think about the vagina like an elevator. So if you think about internally, imagine an elevator shaft running up through the vagina to a point roughly behind the navel. And when we inhale, because the top and the bottom of the can are the respiratory diaphragm and the pelvic floor. So when we breathe in, our respiratory diaphragm descends and it actually stretches our pelvic floor. When we breathe out, our diaphragm and pelvic floor recoil. So think about this like a coffee plunger, or think about the elevator being pushed down to the basement. If you have a really, really underactive, maybe even quite stretched out pelvic floor, like after an instrumental birth, you might think about that elevator's coming down, like the basement is the kind of where we want it to be, but maybe it goes to like P2, like basement level 2. Yeah. It's like it's a bit overstretched. Mm-hmm. And then it should be able to lift all the way up to, let's say, at the navel, the 10th floor. So if it's really underactive, it might only be able to go from like P2 or P3 to like the 3rd floor. And if it's really overactive, it's the opposite. It's like you can't let it all the way go all the way down to the basement, especially with the breath. You're often, if you're overactive, often you have a tendency to breathe into the upper chest. So the elevator might only start on the 5th floor, and they might still be able to turn it on and off, like to the 10th floor and then back to the 5th floor, but they have no ability to get that full range of motion. So when we're training the pelvic floor, we really want it to be optimal in this ability to come all the way to the 10th floor, a strong contraction, and then be able to soften it completely with the inhale breath down to the basement. This is optimal pelvic floor tension, and it's an ability to contract and relax. And we need individual prescription of exercise based on where someone is at on that spectrum.
And they wouldn't always know, like you were saying before, they wouldn't always know whether too tight, hypertonic, because it hasn't got to that point where there's symptoms to go with that. So sometimes I think, yeah, I'm fine, you know, I've got no symptoms, no pelvic floor weakness, don't feel like I'm going to wee myself, so I'm not going to go to the physio. But they should always come to be checked to make sure.
Yeah, absolutely, because in preparation for birth, if they're planning a vaginal birth, we need the pelvic floor to be able to release and to stretch. So if someone is really overactive in the pelvic floor and the fascia around the pelvic floor, that can impact the ability for the pelvic floor to be able to relax and soften in a vaginal birth. So there's still further research that needs to be done into this area, but if the pelvic floor is really tight, I can imagine it would impact someone's risk of, say, perineal tears or a slower labor and ability to completely relax the pelvic floor and for the cervix to dilate. So yeah, I think it's really good to have an understanding of what's happening in your body. And even if that's just bringing an awareness that most women don't have to what's happening down there and learning how to engage properly and how to release properly so that they can feel that in their own body. And then it's also important to train it functionally. I think the pelvic floor is much like any other muscle in the body. If we think about the bicep, for example, to have a good functioning bicep, we need to be able to straighten the arm all the way out and bend the arm all the way in. But if my bicep was constantly stuck here, yeah, it wouldn't be that functional. I might be able to use like the top half of it, but I can't do things like reach out for something on the bench. So to be functional, it needs to be able to lengthen and contract in full range. It needs to be able to contract quickly if I drop something suddenly. So pelvic floor, we need it to be able to turn on really quickly if you cough or sneeze. But then if I want to carry a handbag or a bag of groceries, I need it to be able to sustain like a lower intensity contraction for a long period of time. So let's say with running or with exercise, we need it to be able to have endurance to be able to sustain that contraction for a longer period. And then if I'm lifting something really heavy, like I'm weightlifting in the gym, I need it to be able to contract at a more maximal intensity. Let's say like, you know, an 8 set rep max or something. So we also need the pelvic floor to be able to contract in a really strong maximum contraction. We need it to be able to contract quickly. We need to have endurance. And then we also need it to be functional. So, you know, if I could only ever contract my bicep laying down, it wouldn't be that functional. I need it to be able to contract with movement, and I needed to be able to work synergistically with the other muscles in the area in my shoulder to have this whole coordinated movement of like lifting my drink bottle up to my mouth.
Yeah.
So the pelvic floor is no different. It's just that we've like forever put this little black box and said, just don't touch this area. It's really naughty to talk about, and it's just woman's business. Yeah. You know, it's just like any other muscle. And as a personal trainer, I'm sure you'd understand that, you know, we need to train muscles functionally. We don't just zoom in on the bicep and forget about the rest of the arm. We don't want to just zoom in on the pelvic floor and forget about like the rest of the core or the surrounding muscles like the glutes and the adductors that are actually helping to stabilize that whole pelvic region.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you were saying there about being able to move and functionally move, activate and relax that pelvic floor. And I know in my classes we'll start on the floor, but then we come up into pelvic floor lift through a squat. You know, these things that moms do through everyday life that they need to activate their pelvic floor. And I know through my own birth story, when you were saying before, I had a, which I didn't realize at the time, hypertonic pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. So with my first, didn't see a women's health physio, unaware, I was never aware of a women's health physio. And through the labor, it was a long labor, forceps, episiotomy, suction, you know, everything. And I think if I'd known that was going to happen, I would have for sure to see a women's health physio so I could down train pelvic floor and understand my body more. I didn't think I was in control throughout the labor because I couldn't do what I thought I was supposed to do.
And I think there's a lot of aspects. I think we can't just say, you know, that the only the pelvic floor is going to contribute to that kind of labor. There's a million other things. Like if we think about the physical structures, we can think about what physical structures might, you know, impact a woman's pelvis to, you know, open up the pelvic inlet and the outlet. We can think about what physical structures might restrict that. And definitely the pelvic floor is one of them. But also, you know, emotionally, we know the role of oxytocin and our hormones in facilitating that relaxation response and the ability for the cervix to dilate as well. So I think there's just so many factors. And then there's, you know, fetal positioning, what, you know, if bub's head's deflexed or if there's a certain fetal position, it maybe doesn't matter how relaxed or how good your pelvic floor ability to relax is, you've still got a higher risk of tearing because of, you know, bub's arm being lifted or bub's head being deflexed. So there's like a million things, million pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah.
But if there's an extra thing that we can just do to have more awareness, and I don't think it has to be specifically like, you know, you just do this to be able to have a good birth, because it's just, it's more just, we want to do this as a part of our overall health. It's like we go to the dentist, you know, once a year or once every 6 months just to check up our oral health. I don't think necessarily you need to go to pelvic floor every year, pelvic floor physio every year, but I think it's just another part of our overall health and well-being, and it's something that we only perceive in our society as a need for if there's a problem. So let's just change the narrative to, why don't, instead of waiting until we get a problem, we think about prevention and optimization, because we can actually have a more optimal, it might not be, you know, it might be hypertonic and we might not be aware, but before it becomes a problem and overactive and painful, we can get on top of it and optimize it. And then it leaves women feeling more empowered as well about this part of their body, because they know that there's so much that they can do about preventing things, especially birth trauma.
Yeah. And you touched on earlier, you know, about the weak pelvic floor, we in ourselves when we cough or sneeze. And growing up, you know, I see my mom, my aunties, you know, and crossing the legs when they sneeze or cough, and it's like you led to believe that it's normal growing up, because it's just, it's kind of what everybody does. But I think, especially from the small town in the UK where I'm from, there was no kind of women's health physios. There was no education in that area. And even now it's such a to-do talking about it with the older generation. But it's definitely can be helped.
Absolutely. It's so much we can do about it. It's important. I think the first thing to understand is the reason why it happens is not necessarily because the pelvic floor just becomes so dramatically weak after having a baby. It's because often we lose the reflex. So pre-babies, it is generally an automatic reflex that the pelvic floor will be stimulated by a nerve and contract in response to jumping on a trampoline or jumping or coughing or sneezing. Mm. But often through pregnancy or childbirth, we lose that reflex or it gets inhibited. And then we actually have to consciously contract the pelvic floor in order to splint the urethra shut so that we don't get leakage. So if you think about the urethra like a hose, okay, when we contract the pelvic floor, it pulls the vaginal wall up against the back of the hose, and it's like standing on a hose really quickly. It splints it closed. And what happens is that reflex that used to happen automatically to splint it shut, we now have to do consciously. So if we don't have the timing, the coordination, or the power behind that contraction to splint that hose shut in time, then a little bit of urine will leak out. And it's not hard to retrain that. Like I've worked with, as I said, lots of postmenopausal women, and within one session, they've gone from wetting themselves every day to complete continence. It's not always, for some women it can take a lot of retraining. For some women it's literally just a matter of re-stimulating that reflex and having that conscious awareness. But once we start to train the pelvic floor and preemptively contract in those situations, then we gain control over our bladder, and over time that becomes a reflex again. So it's just, yeah, letting go of that narrative that it's something that we have to put up with.
Yeah.
And recognizing, just as we understand it's important to optimize our physical strength through exercise, through walking, through weight training, whatever it is, it's also important to optimize our long-term pelvic floor health as women so that we can remain continent and have satisfying sex lives and regular bowel motions.
The things that are important.
and so that we're not in pain, because, you know, the heaviness of the pelvic organs post-menopause, if there's a mild prolapse or even a severe prolapse, can create quite a lot of discomfort and symptoms of pain or heaviness or dragging vaginally. And that can be really uncomfortable. And then if the whole core system, I talked about the whole system as like a canister or can, if that whole system's not working well, then other areas in the can start to take too much load, like the lower back, you know, lower back pain, or the abdominal wall in the sense of abdominal separation or hernias or upper back pain. So it's like if we're not optimizing the pelvic floor or all of these elements postpartum, then it can be a cascade of things later down the track.
Touched on prolapse there. Can you explain what a prolapse is for us? And can it happen in later life as well? Perimenopause, menopause, as well as postnatally, earlier postnatal?
Yeah, so prolapse is the descent of one of the organs. So we most commonly talk about vaginal prolapse, which is when one of the vaginal walls, so that could be the wall of the bladder, that could be the wall of the bowel, or it could be the wall of the uterus, starts to push down into the vagina and it lowers down, creating either a visible bulge or symptoms of like a fullness, almost like a tampon sitting really low in the vagina. And it commonly occurs postpartum. There's lots of different causes. So to an element, there is a variation of normal, of wall laxity postpartum. It's like your boobs don't sit in the same place after you've had a baby. We don't expect them to sit in exactly the same place. The breast tissue becomes more lax. The breasts tend to sit a little bit lower. We don't freak out about it. So I think I really want to explain that there is a degree of normal wall laxity early postpartum, because the pelvic floor stretches up to 3.5 times its resting length during a vaginal birth. So there's huge amounts of stretch on the pelvic floor. And then the weight of the baby has put that extra strain down on the pelvic floor in pregnancy. And on top of that, we've got increased hormones like prolactin and estrogen circulating through the body that increase connective tissue laxity. Yeah. So to some degree, a little bit of wall laxity of the bladder or the bowel is quite normal postpartum. I have a lot of women that freak themselves out when they realize that it doesn't quite look the same, or it feels a bit different. And I still would really encourage them to see a pelvic floor physio, but I want to take away that fear and just remind women that they don't look down at their breasts and think, oh my God, something's wrong with me, because they're sitting a bit lower. So the problem occurs when there's been chronic periods of constipation and straining, so chronic downward pressure on those structures, or a long pushing phase in labor or an instrumental birth, particularly with forceps, because that can cause extra stretching to the pelvic floor, and it can even cause a small tear in the deep pelvic floor layer. And the pelvic floor acts, while those ligaments are a little bit more lax, the pelvic floor acts like a hammock to provide extra support to those structures. So if the pelvic floor is weak, or if the pelvic floor is not functioning optimally, then that's when women can start to be symptomatic. And over time, especially if they're not addressing that weakness or not addressing the symptoms, then it can get worse if they keep doing things like straining on the toilet or straining lifting toddlers, or if they haven't built up that core strength postpartum, then what we get is a lot of that downward pressure. And over time, because of that laxity, that downward pressure, it can get worse if we don't have that extra support from the pelvic floor. And then around menopause, that's usually when symptoms will get even worse, because our estrogen levels drop off and then we have even more softening of the connective structures that make everything softer. And if the pelvic floor is not reinforcing that, that's when prolapse can get significantly worse. So prolapse is not something I diagnose in the first sort of 6 months, unless it's really severe, because I like to allow for this normal variation of wall laxity and strengthen the pelvic floor. But certainly we have to make sure that a woman is supporting her core by strengthening the abdominal wall and the pelvic floor and the glutes and the whole system that provides that reinforcement, that support for the pelvic organs, and then making sure she's optimizing her pressure control. And then if on top of all of those things, if she's still symptomatic, then we might start to look at something like a pessary, which is kind of, if you imagine a menstrual cup, similar to that, it's like a ring shaped, and it provides a little bit of extra support and guidance for the pelvic organs in that earlier postpartum phase or later down the track postmenopause to help with symptom management. But that's not the first thing that I go for. It's like, imagine if someone had an injury and you just, you know, you gave them a knee brace or something, and you just said, just wear that for the rest of, you know, rest of your life, without actually strengthening the muscles around the injury and rebuilding that function and that range of motion back. So we can provide that extra support if someone's really symptomatic, but what we really need to focus on is optimizing pressure control, optimizing posture, building strength in the connective tissue in the pelvic floor, in the glutes, and making sure that they're not straining with physical activity and on the toilet and lifting things. So optimizing pressure control in that sense. And then over time, once their menstrual cycle returns and they stop breastfeeding, just like the breasts can get a little bit more firmness in that time, the pelvic organs will likely have that increased fascial integrity around that time.
I could listen to all this fascinating information. So good to listen to you. So coming towards the end, I would want to ask you, so we've got a new mum, how early postnatal can she come and see you? And what advice would you give her for the steps to a safe return to exercise?
Yeah, so I recommend that women book in to see me over telehealth in that first, usually I would say ideally probably 3 to 4 weeks postpartum over telehealth, and then we can establish what their symptoms are, where they might need extra support. I provide them with education over that appointment, and we basically just debrief on what their birth looked like and therefore what are the structures that we really need to focus on optimizing and re-strengthening, because it will be slightly different after a cesarean to a vaginal birth and if there is an episiotomy or a forceps delivery, again, I'm a little bit more cautious.
And you do the telehealth, is that because it's just easier for a new mom?
I do telehealth because I really promote women to honor that first 40 days and to try and stay home and rest as much as possible. And I don't want to add to that stress by them having to come into the clinic. Yeah. If they're really concerned and they want a face-to-face appointment, then I allow that. But I try and promote them to stay at home.
Yeah.
And it's easier for them as well.
Yeah.
And often I'm not going to assess anything at that appointment. It's more a conversation. It's chatting, it's education, and it's starting them off with a program that I think is going to be suitable. I've just released a few months ago my Restore Your Core course, which is an 8-week program where each day a woman will have a pelvic floor exercise that she can do while breastfeeding, as well as either a yoga or Pilates class that's just 10 minutes. And over that 8-week period, we aim to do 10 minutes a day in order to gradually progress the strength in the pelvic floor and around the glutes and the deep abdominal system, and then also optimize posture. Because during that return to exercise phase, I think it's really important that we go through and we educate women on risks like prolapse, urinary incontinence, pelvic floor dysfunction.
Yeah.
And then that we educate them around pressure control. As I said, that's super important. Optimizing posture, teaching them pelvic floor coordination and assessing their pelvic floor tone, and then progressing the exercises. And I do that through Pilates because there's beautiful ways that we can learn that integration mm-hmm. of the deep core system mm-hmm. by laying down and then transitioning onto side lying, where it is quite gravity neutral, and we can start these just really gentle activation exercises early on in the recovery from about 3 or 4 weeks. And then from about 6 weeks or 7 weeks, between 6 and 8 weeks, I might see her in the clinic. But I also see women all over Australia. So in that time, I might, if she wants to, if she's got any risk factors, I might suggest that she have a face-to-face consult before continuing on with the program, or otherwise I can give her some videos on how to self-assess abdominal separation and pelvic floor. Because what I'm more concerned about is her symptoms. Yeah. As I said, there is a degree of wall laxity that's normal, and I find that most women that I do get to self-assess, it just freaks them out because they don't really know what it looked like before. Mm. And so now they're looking at things, and the labia can be quite swollen postpartum, and it can be quite frightening if they haven't had a good understanding of what their sort of variation of vaginal anatomy and vulva anatomy can look like. And then as I said, I'm more concerned about symptoms and screening for pelvic floor dysfunction based on their birth and their risk factors, before then gradually, step by step, following a sequence of exercises to slowly build up their glute strength, their core strength. But I encourage them to monitor what I call the 5 P's, which is pain. So they shouldn't be having any pain. They shouldn't be peeing, obviously. They shouldn't be getting a feeling of pressure or kind of popping of the abdominal core, mm-hmm. you know, like the tummy kind of rising like a loaf of bread. It's a sign that you're not engaging and maintaining that deep core recruitment. Peeping or doming, so just getting them to monitor those things will just give me an indication of what their deep recruitment is like, making sure that they're not making abdominal separation or prolapse symptoms worse, and making sure that it's not exacerbating pain, because the exercise should really be making them feel good and not making them feel worse in any way. And that's the importance of individual prescription, really, because, you know, one mum might have a knee injury and it might be good for her to do specific sideline glute strengthening while her knee settles down, whereas another mum, she might have some back pain and it's going to be beneficial for her to support her postural muscles. So again, such an advocate for small group or personal training, because individual exercise prescription is so important.
I love that 5, the reminder for them as a self-assessment. That's good.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, it's good. All right. So how do the listeners get in touch with you? What's the best way?
Yeah. The easiest way to book is on my website, or through my socials. They can book in for an in-person or telehealth consultation, either in pregnancy or postpartum. Yeah, I've got loads of information on my website, resources if someone's just had, if they're early postpartum and they are looking for ways that they can support themselves. Mm-hmm. They can scroll onto my postpartum page, and at the bottom it asks what was their birth story, and then they can have a look at resources specific to that birth and ways that they can support themselves specifically, and then book in for a telehealth appointment if they're early on or if they're not on the Sunshine Coast, or they can book in to see me in person.
Amazing. Just before you disappear, mm-hmm. just in your business world, what are the three most influential people to you in business?
In business, like that I've learned from?
Yes.
Okay.
Been influenced by, learned.
Yeah, I like that. I did an amazing course that was by Kelly McHugh, she runs Digital Yoga Academy, and it was about marketing an online yoga platform. But it really taught a lot about sort of self-development in business and took a lot of the yogic philosophy and principles into business, which I really liked. So that would be one I like. Demartini has some really great ideas around core values and really understanding what your core values are so that you can make sure that your business model's aligned with that.
Yeah.
There's one other who I've just like lost his name, but he's an American guy who's quite audacious, and he talks about the North Star, having your North Star. Mm. I can't remember his name, but you would know it.
As soon as we finish, it'll pop.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just this concept of having a North Star, so having a direction in your business and kind of not being so attached to the way that you get there.
Yeah.
Which I think is a beautiful principle in life as well, and even in birth, just having a compass rather than a specific, like, I have to go this way and cross this bridge and then turn left. It's more just a kind of guidance of a North Star where you're aiming to go, but totally being open to that looking however it looks, because I know that things are forever evolving and changing, and nothing ever looks the way that you think it will.
I like that.
Yeah. The program like that I've created, it's far from what I first thought it would be. I started off just wanting to get out of physio for a bit because I was burnt out, and then started filming a database of Pilates and yoga videos for pregnant and postpartum women, wanting to go online because my partner was looking at jobs all over Australia and we were planning to move, and then he got a job in Gympie, so we didn't move. So then I started seeing clients, but then I tailored the programs and started putting them into the software that I use for physio, and then it just slowly eventually evolved to what it is now, and I'm certain that in 5 years' time it'll be completely different to what I expect it to look like. But my main intention is to be able to support women, to share my knowledge, and to do that in a way that still supports myself, because I've been to places of burnout before, and I think it's really important that we embody what we're teaching. I want to have kids in the next few years, and I want to be able to work at home so that I can breastfeed and not worry about rushing off to clients. And
it's good to have those values in your personal business life and kind of combine them to make it work. It is important.
I think it is all one, but it's just understanding what's important to you and looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But we got off topic.
It's good to just chat though. Well, you're smashing it here on the sunny coast, and I am so happy to be working alongside you, and thank you for joining me today. It's been really, really nice to chat. Hope you've enjoyed the chat.
Nice I've really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, likewise. It's been nice to refer a lot of clients your way and to see the results that the mothers are getting.
Amazing. Thanks, Caitlin.
See you, lovely.
See you later. If you are looking to return to exercise after having a baby, head to motivatemums.com to download my checklist on returning to exercise safely. And also follow me on Instagram, motivatemums.com.